This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
James, presumably, Donnie, if that all goes well, he'll make rehab starts, at least a couple of them. They're not just going to throw him right into major league action. How long does that entire process take? Just from mid-April, when he would presumably start to throw baseball, when is Jared Jones getting done with all of that? I would think probably not till at least mid-May at the earliest, if not later. To me, he's out for 3 months when I see this. 2.5 at bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, the good news here is that he avoided Tommy John. You brought that up, and that was the silver lining that everybody took from the post.
I'll be honest, I feel like I should say he avoided it for now, though. That's why I brought up the Cole comparison. It makes me very uneasy.
I know, but at least as of what we know right now, he avoided an injury that is guaranteed to miss not only a whole season, but at the time that it happened, it would be a season and a half. Like, if that was the determination from the second opinion that he got, he would have been back in, what, July of 2026?
Pretty much.
Maybe even later than that, who knows. But yeah, he's going to miss a few months here at minimum because, like you laid out there, I mean, I don't think he's picking up a ball before May. You kind of went with the late April.
Yeah, I gave you the straightaway, like, I guess aggressive, or according to Noah's reporting. Crucially, have you seen the Pirates actually say anything? It's Noah who had this out there.
I haven't seen the actual team.
The team has not said anything. I trust Noah. I think he does a good job on that beat. No, certainly nobody has refuted what Noah is saying.
And I believe there is also a meeting of sorts happening tonight that will make it more official.
But yeah, I think Noah's correct, because I think they would probably jump at the chance, like, to say, no, he's got this wrong. So I'm giving you just the straight up 6 weeks timeline. You're giving me more probably what it might, like, realistically would be.
I mean, we also know how baseball injuries get slow played. We've had this discussion with Spencer Horwitz too, and his injury is just it's the wrist thing. I question if we see the guy take a real swing for the Pirates before Memorial Day. I know that I'm probably going way long on that, but we just know how baseball operates and how they will slow play injuries. Especially, I think that's even taken more seriously here because they view Jared Jones in a very high regard. He's not Paul Skeens. Nobody's really on that level. But they're looking at this guy as, you know, this dude has to be part of our nucleus going forward. So if it takes a little bit longer for him to get back now, and that means a better future for him, then that's what we're going
to
do.
Look, I guess I don't – I genuinely do not mean this to sound so doom and gloom and so negative and so concerned. This is just my honest feeling. And I hate saying it because I'll be honest, in a weird way, it's more fun to watch Jones when he's really dealing than even Paul Skeens, because he's not like this big, intimidating. It's kind of like the difference between seeing like prime LeBron in the NBA go off versus Curry, right? One guy physically is a force of nature. The other guy, the fact that he's doing it is almost like defying belief. So seeing a guy like Jones, who I think is probably, you know, other than being in way better shape and way more athletic, is roughly my size, like not all too dissimilar in terms of height and weight than I am. Seeing him when he is really going off is an incredible sight to behold. So I don't want to be saying this, but we just know how arms can be taxed and can get chewed up and spit out by like the process in baseball of throwing it as hard as you can, as often as you can, and then throwing as many sharp breaking pitches, of which he has many, frequently. We know what it does. Like, there are plenty of data points to tell us what you almost have to factor and build in with certain pitchers, right? With most pitchers. And so, knowing what throwing a baseball, the way major league pitchers try to throw a baseball, can do to the human arm, it has me feeling like, unless this injury is something in his shoulder, which doesn't really make me feel any better, unless it's some sort of obvious, provable thing that has almost nothing to do with those ligaments in his elbow, the ulnar collateral ligament, I'm nervous that this is merely staving off for maybe 6 to 8 months something that in a sense will be inevitable for him. And I don't know if other people feel that way. I don't know if I'm being way too pessimistic, but the first thing I thought of was how Gerrit Cole, a bigger body, a guy who had been there and done that a lot more than Jones has, obviously, he gets hurt. Yankee fans find out he's not going to need Tommy John at first. Oh, okay, cool, he'll be back. But it felt like that clock was already ticking and never stopped, really. You slowed it down, maybe, but you never stopped it. If it were a disaster movie, you'd be trying to evacuate everyone off of Earth. You wouldn't be trying to actually stop the disaster, because eventually it's going to get there. I might be proven wrong. I hope I am proven wrong. But that was my gut takeaway, Don, when this NOAA report came out.
Yeah, I don't want to go super pessimistic right off the bat, but I get where you're coming from, because we do see sometimes these compound a little bit with serious injuries. But I think everybody yesterday seeing that news kind of took a sigh of relief. And we had Greg Brown on the air yesterday at this time, 24 hours ago, and his tone immediately changed when Jared Jones got brought up, and then Pony puts the tweet out, Jared Jones' dad's getting in the mix.
Cody Duncan inserting himself into the proceedings.
Yes, people were not able to read that Greg Brown clearly said it and not Pony. But they will take any chance to dunk on Pony, so I see that.
Didn't go well for Cody.
We do find out, okay, 6 weeks until the guy can throw, he avoids the major injury that I think everybody thought was looming.
Yeah. By the way, I'm an idiot who can't count. I said mid-April for throwing. You're right.
I know. I was a little bit thrown off.
Donnie, I can't do math. I don't know why.
He's not picking up a ball until May.
I think in my brain, I actually thought it was somehow early March. I apologize. As people pointed out on the YouTube comments, I cannot count. Yes, mid-May. He might not pick up a ball till June is maybe more what you could say. So, yes, Chris can't count. You can file that one. The thing that got me was when NOAA put out the tweet, his sourced up tweet saying it's 6 weeks, no throwing, you got a bunch of people saying that'll teach Greg Brown to talk out of class like that. He got it so wrong. I'm glad it's only 6 weeks. Do these people have any idea about how these injuries work and how teams handle these guys? I'm baffled. You follow baseball for a living if you are following the Pirates beat writer and responding to his tweets, and you just say, oh, hunky-dory, 6 weeks, we're all good to go, back and better than ever? Like, man, that is a naive way to approach this if I've ever heard one. I saw that a lot in the responses to Noah's tweet, and I did not understand it. So it's not the worst-case scenario for the Pirates with Jared Jones, but, man, it does not feel like an injury announcement worth celebrating at all, which I actually feel like people kind of were.
I think people definitely were. And that's why
I don't think that at all.
That's where I'll defend Brownie here a little bit more.
He's right.
Yeah, like, okay, we could tell by the tone that he was using, he probably expected the worst case scenario of Tommy John. let's also not act like at the same time this is just some great news. Like, oh, the Pirates just dodged a major bullet. No, dodging a major bullet would be like, yeah, we actually found nothing really wrong. It'll be 2 weeks before he can throw, and he'll be back up and at him in about a month.
I'd rather hear like lat tightness or anything. Oh, he's got an oblique. I don't care. Just, it's obvious that it's his arm. And so that's all that should matter, and it ain't good. State's Pro Day was today. You know that means we're going to talk about who the Steelers were keeping their eyes on there. That's in about a half hour. Donnie's debrief. I have a feeling I know where Donnie is going to head for his debrief topic, but I'll save that for him in 15 minutes. Fan hotline right now on the PM team, brought to you by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. It is on that fan hotline where we find our friend Aditi Kinkabwala, NFL on CBS, sideline reporter, among many other hats Aditi wears. How are you today, Aditi?
I am great. I am driving into Cleveland, where the Browns are hosting a girls' flag football summit as the state of Ohio tries to get girls' flag football a sanctioned high school sport, just as the state of Pennsylvania has done. Did you know that? Did you know that Pennsylvania has sanctioned girls' flag football as an official varsity sport?
In the dim recesses of my mind, I think I did. It was not something that I would have been able to call up at a moment's notice, but now it's one of those now that you're talking about it things, I think I'm kind of remembering it. And honestly, that's how it should be in Ohio, because of football, traditional tackle football is a huge sport there, and I suspect they would have plenty of girls willing to line up and play for flag football. Oh. Speaking of which, I almost said Donnie because I was talking to him. Speaking of which, Aditi, in Cleveland, I know you are good friends with Ken Carman and Anthony Lima, and boy, did they get into it this morning. Because
oh, they did.
Anthony posited that he thought there was a very real chance that former Steelers first-round pick Kenny Pickett could be the day one, week one starter in Cleveland. And Ken was just trying to pin him down and force him to make a prediction. He, of course, would not do that. Do you think, though, that Pickett has a chance to start up there week one for Cleveland?
I do. I absolutely do. It will be an open competition, not a rigged competition, not quite what the situation was a year ago in Pittsburgh when Russell Wilson was brought in. Kenny Pickett will have a chance to show how he has grown and developed and what he took from Philadelphia, and he'll get to work with Kevin Stefanski, who, when not hindered by Ken Dorsey, actually is a very smart offensive mind.
So you're bullish on what might happen for Pickett there in Cleveland, to be very transparent.
I am.
You think that this could be a rebirth that re-kickstarts his career in the NFL?
I really do. I think that we've seen it quite a bit. You know, we talk about a guy like Sam Darnold who was labeled a bust because he wasn't in particularly good situations and perhaps wasn't necessarily ready for all that surrounded the, in his case, having to start in New York City. I think Kenny Pickett, as we've talked about ad nauseum, the dysfunction in the Matt Canada offense and the other things that were happening within that offense that Najee Harris has sort of alluded to, that Willie Colon has sort of alluded to, all of that, plus the mess of being third string in training camp and all of a sudden installed second team, then being thrust in, all of that, none of that was really anything that behooves the development of a young quarterback or helps. So he gets away from that. He goes to Philadelphia, where that offense operates very differently. The way they approach the professionalism in that building is different than what Kenny Pickett had when he was in Pittsburgh. Does he take something from that? And is he able to use that in Cleveland now? And I know from conversations that I had with front office members a year ago when we were talking about whether Kenny Pickett would have had the opportunity to go to a team where he could have the chance to start, there were definitely people in that building that felt that he was a starter-capable quarterback in the National Football League. So he'll have a chance. Let's see what he can do.
And certainly the same...
That's all you can say, you know?
Certainly the same thing applies, Aditi, for another new face in a new place. Russell Wilson and the Giants should be a late-30s renaissance for him, correct?
You know what? I've been told that Jameis Winston will have an opportunity to compete. May the best man win.
Who gets to do the pregame speech? I think that's all that matters there.
Well, you know, I might cede that to Jameis, even if I'm the starter. I'll just say that. But you know what? I think the interesting piece for Steelers fans there is that the Giants felt that they needed to make a move. They needed to figure out who is essentially going to be on the train. And Aaron Rodgers was not operating on their timeline. So that is transferable to what we've been saying now for some time, that Aaron Rodgers is not necessarily feeling an enormous urgency to sign up with a team and go do spring ball right now.
Do you think that, okay, so you don't, it sounds to me like then, because I was going to ask you next, it seems obvious there's only one chair left here in musical chairs unless Rodgers wants to wait until midseason. It doesn't sound like you think, though, that he and the Steelers will be consummating this deal that everyone's anticipating will happen anytime soon, correct? You don't think the timeline is he signs, he's in, he's doing his thing in a matter of days or whatever?
And that he's running OTAs and...
Yes. So you just think that he'll be allowed to kind of call his shot timeline-wise with them, correct?
And why wouldn't he be? What leverage do the Steelers have?
They could just say, we know we're probably only going to win 10 games and probably not win a playoff game with you, so we could do it without you. The old Branch Rickey thing that he told Ralph Kiner many years ago for the Pirates.
I mean, if that's what they decide, if they decide that they're really not interested in him, then okay.
Well, clearly they do think he's the missing
piece. Are they really in a position where they want to give him an ultimatum?
No, clearly they think he's the missing piece, and that's the real meat of this for me. Like, do you really see, I think more than anything, you described at length the environment Kenny Pickett was trying to thrive in when he got to Pittsburgh and how that did not help him or do him any favors. And it all trickles down to one degree or another, whether it's a coach that the head coach hired who's making it not an optimal situation, or it's the head coach himself. It all trickles down from there in that kind of setting. Do you really think that there's reason to believe that Mike Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers, assuming that this does eventually happen, will be able to make better music than the Steelers did with Pickett?
I do, because I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to defer.
So it's going to be Aaron Rodgers' show then?
No, but I'm not saying that in a way that Aaron Rodgers is going to run roughshod over anyone. And I told you this, that we had had a conversation this year, Aaron Rodgers and my crew had had a conversation when the Jets had made the switch from Nathaniel Hackett to Todd Downing. And Downing had said to us that the first thing Aaron Rodgers said to him is, how do I serve you? How do I help you? And when we kind of pressed Aaron on that, he spoke at length about what servant leadership looks like and being a part of the team. I mean, I've said this to you and I've said this to Pony. I think that there's a lot of noise as related to Aaron Rodgers that kind of is noise. And it's fun to cast him as a villain when it may not actually be reality. I think that Aaron Rodgers has an absolute attention and focus to detail that maybe the Steelers haven't seen from that position in quite some time. I mean, I can tell you about long conversations I've had with Devontae Adams where Adams says he's the receiver that he is because Rodgers forced him to be detailed in a way that no one else would make him be detailed. So I think it would be fabulous for the Steelers if Aaron Rodgers could get in here and start kind of having an influence. And again, one of the things that I think would be great is he's not going to sit here and cover up things that are annoying or frustrating. If a receiver is constantly late to meetings, you're going to hear about it. And some people may say that, oh, that's the drama. But other people may say, well, that's accountability.
I mean, I would say that would over, if you're like, just hypothetically, I know you're describing that in hypothetical terms, that would make Mike Tomlin look pretty bad if Aaron Rodgers was airing some of the laundry that Tomlin loves to try to keep in house. And that's why I would be wondering if there would be a blow up between those two. We know Tomlin would get frustrated, even if he wouldn't admit it, when Ben would kind of take the reins and talk on our station before Mike's news conference. I can't imagine
if... What are you talking about? frustrated. He'd act like he'd never heard it. He'd act like he'd never, that he didn't know what we were talking about.
Yes, but in yes, exactly. And in so doing, everybody knew he was probably seething. I guess I can see that happening again in this situation. And if you say it's from what you're saying, Rodgers would not defer and would not worry about, you know, pissing off the head coach, for lack of a better term. I just have a hard time imagining that that partnership would yield the kind, bear the kind of fruit that they think it will bear, Aditi.
Maybe that's the way that the head coach needs to be pushed after this many years of not making the playoffs. Maybe sometimes you need to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
I would prefer that push come from the owner instead of like a $17 million a year, 3-year extension, but I see what your point is.
I've said that. Have I not said that all season long?
You have.
This is where we would like to see ownership help the coach. This is where we've talked about examples of this, where owners have stepped in and kind of guided their coaches to see things that maybe they aren't seeing themselves. But at some point, we have to accept and acknowledge that that's just not what Steelers ownership is right now.
No, it is not, and not sure when it will be. Aditi, we have to go. I appreciate
it. I don't know. It could be really fun.
I think it's going to not work well, but I think it's going to be really fun for me nonetheless, because my job is fun when there's fun, dramatic things happening around the team, good or bad. So that's what I think I'm getting. Best of both worlds here.
I think that if you're looking for change, here's what I'll say. If you're looking for change, you're not going to get the status quo from Aaron Rodgers. And maybe, you know, people are talking about the Steelers culture and if he fits the Steelers culture. Maybe he doesn't. But maybe there needs to be a little bit of a shakeup, considering what the last few years have been. I don't know. But I don't think that Aaron Rodgers is going to hold his tongue or bow down to anybody.
Aditi, we'll talk again next week. Thank you.
All right. Have fun.
That's pretty strong. That's strong, and I think no real, like, parsing needed, Donnie. That was a lot of shots at the culture Mike Tomlin created. We know Aditi is more bullish on Kenny Pickett, I think it's fair to say, than almost anybody we talk to. I don't think Kenny Pickett's ever going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I think that is more a Kenny Pickett thing than it is anything else by a lot. I don't think the Steelers helped him. But I don't know. I took no ambiguity from that conversation. It sounds like Aditi thinks Rodgers could work here because Rodgers is essentially, did you take it as almost a harder working Ben Roethlisberger, where Ben's problem was that he wasn't exactly putting in the hours late in his career?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how I interpreted that. I was trying to parse how I felt about it. And it certainly sounds like Aditi thinks that Mike Tomlin's going to have to almost impress Aaron Rodgers, not the other way around. Either way, as the Steelers turn, like sands through the hourglass, these are the Steelers of our lives. You know what, Donnie? I agree with Pony, who's out today. He's not feeling very well. We're not going to make fun of him because everyone's battling, except for Donnie, who's like the picture of health today. This theme is growing on me for the debrief. Donnie's debrief is brought to you by Boyd & Blair Vodka, proud sponsor of the Fan 15th anniversary. Don, my friend, wearing an unbelievable WWF pre-Attitude Era hat, by the way.
This has gotten rave reviews.
I mean, you look, it's like the Rob Lowe of wrestling hats right there. Rob Lowe at the Super Bowl wearing an NFL hat. If they caught you at a pay-per-view wearing that hat, you'd become a meme. Anyway.
I saw it on there was a wrestling podcast that Will Sasso was a guest on.
Why don't you tell me, Gorilla?
And I was seeing the clips just on, like, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. And I was like, man, that hat is, I got to get the hat. Quick search.
It's a good hat.
Amazon, it was under $10.
It's a very good
hat.
An
easy move.
Yeah. All right. And you also, I thought you were wearing a WrestleMania shirt, but no, it is in fact WrestleMania. Unbelievable.
I got this baby for under $10 as well.
Man,
at a store nearby.
You still might have overpaid.
But I told myself, you know what, it's on like a $7 shirt rack. Even if he's only here for a season, I have to have a shirt that says this.
Well, also, you don't strike me as a guy that's going to stop wearing that thing to work just because he's now a New York Giant.
And you know what else?
Hmm.
From that same store,
yes,
a season ago, I got a crew neck about Rudolph saving Christmas. And I thought this baby's going to have to get put away for good when
Wrong.
He went elsewhere. And
Wrong.
Now we're back in the saddle.
All right, let's have it.
The debrief, March 26, 2025. A few shakeups on the broadcast teams with CBS Sports for both their college and NFL coverage. Not a ton, but there is a team on each that will be looking a little bit different soon enough. Next season will be the final one for Gary Danielson, the color analyst on the CBS college football coverage with Brad Nessler.
I always think of it as SEC on CBS. I know it isn't that now, but that's what I'll like. You tell me Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson are in a game. We're in Death Valley. LSU's taking on Alabama. They're both ranked in the top five. The score is going to be 9-6, something like that. Or they're in the swamp and Florida's randomly good, but they're about to get smoked, or they're about to lose to Kentucky in inexplicable fashion, that kind of thing.
He really became a staple of their coverage. I mean, it was Vern Lundquist and Gary, and now
he's
it is Brad Nessler
good.
And Gary.
He's underrated good. Like, I always thought Gary Danielson's one of his best attributes was, because he never gets mentioned as, like, one of the great color commentators in college football, I think, because Vern was so legendary, obviously.
And Nessler is certainly no slouch.
Right, Nessler's very good. I always kind of thought that Danielson was underrated because he would just do a solid job analyzing the game, but I also felt like he complimented how madcap the action could get in those games. Like, I thought he always did a good job of seeming just as surprised by some of the crazy stuff that happens in college football as, like, you would be at home, if that makes sense. Like, he got into the game the way I would want an analyst to get into the game at the collegiate level.
And he will be replaced by Charles Davis on the college coverage. So that takes Davis out of an NFL booth. So you may be asking, where will CBS go there? J.J. Watt will join Ian Eagle as the number two color man on the NFL on CBS. You have your A-team with Nance and Romo, and right behind them will now be Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt.
I've got a lot of thoughts on this, and I think you and I might get into it here a little bit, but that's fine. Not a huge fan of what I heard from him on Netflix. I think he was on the Steelers' Christmas game against the Chiefs.
He was, and he was with Ian Eagle.
Yeah, not that good. He just seemed very, I know it's pretty new to him, so I expect him to get better, because I have like a head full of thoughts right now on this that are all kind of pulled in different directions. I do think J.J. Watt is the kind of person who gives a crap about doing these things well. Like, I don't think he's just going to, you know, put in the basic amount of time for the paycheck. I actually thought he was pretty good when they'd throw it back to him at the studio and he'd, like, do those little highlights, like, clever little quips. Like, I thought he handled that pretty well. Unimpressed by him on the game. Like, and by that I mean, I don't think he did anything really bad, but there's nothing he said during that game that struck me as memorable. I don't recall one part of that game. Was he the guy who said something about Pickens not running his route correctly, or was that somebody else? Because they had a three-person booth.
I thought that was Burleson.
It was Burleson. You're right.
I wonder if he got asked about this first.
That might be a step down for him, though.
I think he's pretty damn good.
I think he's good, too, but that might be a step down for him. Isn't he hosting, like, CBS, like, regular?
He hosts the CBS,
the morning show.
Yeah.
That's a step down for him to be a color commentator on the number two broadcast team, I would think.
Well, I'm wondering if he would choose to do that over being in the studio every Sunday, but I guess with the travel,
that's what I mean.
Maybe,
like,
that would.
I think
add
that
up.
Would be. I think he would be like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm a studio guy with almost no exception." He made the best point in that game, the most interesting point. I do have a lifesaver in right now, Donnie. The throat's drying out somehow. I just thought Watt was just kind of there. Nothing in that game broadcast said to me, "Oh yeah, J.J. Watt. He's additive." At this point. And here's the other thing. I don't know how he'll try to play it in that role, because Ian Eagle's kind of slyly funny. Would you agree? Like, Ian's
yes.
got, he'll get some sly jokes in there. He's very fast on his feet. I do think that's going to work in Watt's favor, that he'll have one of, I think, the absolute best in the business as a partner. I think Watt is the kind of guy who can be very funny on social media. I think we all know this. If you've got the time to get the reply, figure out the reply and send it, like, it just is easier for you to send it on Twitter or on even on Instagram. I think there are those kinds of funny people, and then there are real-time, really quick on their feet funny people. I do not see him as the latter, and I think you have to have a little of that sly humor to make it work. So he's going to have to pick a lane. Does he want to be the guy who tries to give straight analysis, and he plays it pretty straight. Charles Davis would occasionally have a laugh with Ian. Or does he kind of want to be the entertainer in that role?
I think if you're the guy that's new to this, you have to kind of work off what the veteran in the booth has been doing. And now I have no idea what their conversations will be like. And maybe since Ian has been doing it forever, he would probably say the opposite of like, listen, man, whatever makes you comfortable, I'll be able to work with. Because Ian has been in that booth for so long, he can pretty much work with anybody. And he also does multiple sports. He does work with dozens of different people.
Yeah.
So that's where I think Ian may look to JJ as like, hey, whatever you're comfortable doing, whatever style you want to do, I will make it work myself.
So here's the other thing. This is all, and this is something that I would hope would come with reps, but how many games did he actually work in the booth? He did the Netflix game. Like, how much of a dossier, a CV does he have when it comes to being in the booth? Because I can't think of a bunch of games that involved him. Can you? The Christmas one on Netflix.
I'm not sure how many.
Not there can't
the
be many.
Is
my
games.
I guess my point is there cannot be many. You know what else is an art? And you've done a lot of play-by-play and color commentary generally, and so you know this. You can have all the knowledge you want. It is absolutely an art and a learned skill to be able to impart it quickly and efficiently, like in between plays. You might have this complex breakdown you want to do of why a play worked a certain way, but you got to be able to tell that story in, what, maybe 20 seconds tops? If you got a good play-by-play man and you're working on TV, I get it. You can, like, extend that a little bit. But it's one thing to know, okay, the interior lineman here, this is where this play started. I know it was a rushed pass to the outside. Collinsworth's actually very good at this, where it's like an overthrow on an out route or something, right? And Collinsworth will say, hold on, here's what really happened. You had Aaron Donald beat this guard center combo, this double team, beat it like a drum. He blew this play up. It was supposed to go to so-and-so, and he had to get to his hot read, and he overthrew it because he could never, like, and Collinsworth was, I think, has always been good at, like, seeing that in real time and knowing that's where I want to go with this analysis. And I think that's going to be tough for a guy like Watt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to rule out him learning the position or, you know, his ability to get ready for it, because he at least has some experience in that booth. And, you know, obviously TV versus radio, a whole different animal. He's only used to TV. So that's probably a good thing in this case. He doesn't have to really think about the two different parties there
yep.
that he's working with. But I think just being with Eagle will help him greatly.
A rising iron raises all boats, right? A rising tide lifts all boats.
And also, yes. I think, circling back to Danielson, I think a credit to him, you know, kind of the guy that put this whole thing in motion, it seems.
Yeah.
Maybe he himself was sensing, you know, I'm kind of slipping a little bit. The game is so much different than when I was used to it. And he's thinking, you know what, I'm able to get out of here. And I'm still
on a high
pretty
note.
Much on the top of my game.
Damn. I respect
and
anybody
I don't want,
that's
I don't
want to
see
that.
People, you know, watch me slip in real time.
I'm ready to fish and play golf. I could respect that.